The following message is copyrighted by Westminster Theological Seminary. Duplication, distribution, or other use of all or any part of this message is not permitted without prior written consent. Please direct your inquiries to communications@wts.edu. For all other information, please visit the main website at www.wts.edu.
For my text this evening, I'd like to direct your attention to 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 24 through the first part of verse 27, 3.5 verses. During these evenings that we have opportunity to be together, we're looking together at portions of the New Testament that deal with sporting events. Last week, we heard Paul say that he presses on toward the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. 2 weeks from tonight, Lord willing, we'll look at Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1. But here is one of those passages, 1 Corinthians 9, 24 through the first part of 27. Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly. So fight I, not as one that beateth the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection. May God today give us understanding concerning his own word. If you have a pew Bible near to you and are willing to do this, turn to the very back pages for a very brief geography lesson. Look at map number 8. You've probably never before looked at map number 8 in the back of the pew Bible. Map number 8. And find Corinth. If you have any trouble, it's at 3D. You find 3 in the left margin and D at the top of the page, and there right in Greece, in the middle of Greece, is Corinth. Paul wrote this letter to the Corinthians from Ephesus, across the sea there, where he had spent 3 years. Corinth, as you see on the map, if you look carefully, if you have bifocals like I do, you may be able to see with them. If that's difficult, take them off and look very carefully, and you'll be able to see that Corinth is on a little piece of land, an isthmus, that joins the Peloponnesus, the southern part of Greece, to the main body of Greece. Now, when Paul wrote to the Corinthian Christians, it was no accident that he used sports page language. I'm sure you've heard of the Olympic Games. I know you know of the modern Olympic Games, and I'm sure you know of the ancient Olympic Games, but there were also held every other year games called the Isthmian Games. They were held on the isthmus on which Corinth is and was. The Isthmian Games. They were probably more well-known, more famous in the ancient world than the Olympic Games. But of course, they've been lost in antiquity to us now. Every 2 years, they were held right near Corinth. They were held in March and April of the alternating years, which were chilly months in that part of the world then. There would have been cool breezes blowing across that area. Motels were not readily available, as far as I'm aware, and people stayed in tents. It's at least curious that Paul spent 2 years in Corinth with Priscilla and Aquila, and all three of them were tent makers, and it could be that Paul spent that time there making tents in order to sell them, in order to use them during the Isthmian Games at the end of that two-year period. Certainly Paul would have used that opportunity to preach the gospel, for there would have been thousands of people there at the Isthmian Games to see the games, and a tremendous opportunity for Paul to preach. The Isthmian Games, as I have said, were very well known in the ancient world. Originally, in those games, there were simply sprints, just short races, kinds of sprints that we're used to today. Gradually, other sports were added to the Isthmian Games, longer runs, boxing, wrestling, high jumping, broad jumping, the discus and javelin. Until the time of Paul, there were many games that were part of the Isthmian Games. The Emperor Nero, in the year 66, took part in the Isthmian Games as a participant. Now, gradually, other kinds of events were added to the games, like poetry reading, oratory, and music. And Nero competed in music and oratory. He wasn't apparently particularly proficient in either, and had the opposition either beaten up or bought off, and then turned up being the winner in the 66 Isthmian Games. He also, at that time, dedicated a canal, the opening or the beginning of a new canal that was going to be built across the isthmus. That canal was completed in 1880, which is just a little bit after the dedication by Emperor Nero. But the Isthmian Games were very famous, very well known, so that when Paul writes to the Corinthian Christians and uses sports page language, as he does in 1 Corinthians 9, 24 to 27, this is language right off the sports page, they would have known exactly what he was talking about. These would have been images familiar to them. Paul says three things here in this passage. He first of all tells us about sporting events in general, and we'll look at that in just a moment. Then he tells us about the Christian life, and then he gives a personal testimony. Those three things. First of all, will you notice with me some of the things that Paul says about sporting events in general, and some of these are so obvious as to be commonplace. The first thing he says is there may be many competitors. In the Olympic Stadium, which has been excavated, there were 20 lanes down which the sprinters ran, 20 at a time, and they had to run heat after heat after heat to determine the best ones. There were many competitors. And so there are today in sports many competitors. Now, sometimes we're not aware of that. If you're out bowling with your girlfriend or your boyfriend, or if you're playing tennis with someone you know, you would think that those are the only competitors. I mean, you work against them, and you forget that while you're playing tennis, so are hundreds of thousands of people playing tennis all over the world. If you're playing on a fraternity softball team or a church softball team, and you're playing against another fraternity or church, you can sometimes think those are the only two teams in all the world, and that that's all the competition that really matters, and you forget that there are thousands of teams competing all at the same time. So Paul says here, even though we may not be aware of it all the time, there are many competitors in sports. And he says about these people, they all work hard at it. Know ye not that they which run in a race, says Paul, run all. They all run. If he were talking about baseball, he would say, know ye not that they which play baseball all. They all work at it. They which play football all work hard at it. Now, that's true whether you're a professional or an amateur, or whether you're just playing to enjoy it, or whether you're very serious about it. You work hard at it. You put a lot of energy into playing sports, and so does everybody who plays in sporting events. Paul says that's just a generality here. He also says that only one of them will receive the prize. Now, eventually, you get eliminated, all except one team or one person, depending on what the sport is, whether it's a team sport or an individual sport. No matter how hard you work at it, no matter how far up the ladder you go, no matter how far you go in the playoffs, eventually you get eliminated except for one team or one person. There may be hundreds of thousands of bowlers in the United States, but there is only one best bowler. There may be dozens and dozens of baseball teams in the United States, but there is only one world champion in October, just one. There may be many teams that compete at many different levels, but only one wins the prize, says Paul. And then he says something else in verse 25 that I think is very important. He says, every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. He's saying that everyone who really cares to win in sports exercises self-control in all things. It wasn't easy to enter the Olympics in ancient Greece. It was not easy to enter the Isthmian Games. You had to swear an oath that said that you had trained for 10 months for those events. You had to swear an oath that said you had eaten the proper food during those 10 months, that you had exercised properly, and that there was no moral blemish in your life. The oath involved all of those things. It was not easy to get into the game. You had to be temperate in all things, in everything. In everything. We see that kind of thing today when we see a distance runner running long into the night as he prepares and trains for a race that's coming up. We see a wrestler who drives himself in order that he might compete adequately in the college wrestling competition. We see that today. There's an interesting Greek word here. Every man that striveth, that's the word, for the mastery is temperate in all things. The Greek word is agonizo, from which we get agonize. That's the Greek word, agonize. The Greek word for game is agony. That's the exact Greek word for game, agony. And what this verse says is, every man that agonizes for the mastery is temperate in all things. Athletes who have produced know what that word means. Maybe you've seen the twisted, contorted face of a distance runner who crosses the finish line first. Maybe you've seen the wrestler's face after he's completed 9 tough minutes against a tough opponent. Everyone who agonizes, Paul says, for the mastery is temperate in all things. That's a simple rule of sports. Really got nothing to do with the spiritual life, at least not yet. It's just a simple rule of sports. The Greek says, everyone who stretches every fiber exercises self-control in all things. It was true then, it's true now. If you really care to win in sports, you have to agonize. That's the Greek word, that's the English word. Now, people do this, according to Paul, so that they can win a corruptible crown. He says that in verse 25. They do it to obtain a corruptible crown. That simply means a crown that passes away. Originally, in the ancient games, the crown that you won was made of parsley leaves or celery leaves, sort of woven together into a crown. It was corruptible. It didn't last very long. Nothing wrong with it. It just didn't last very long. Then later, as time passed, they made one that was woven out of pine needles in some way or other. It didn't last very long either. It was a corruptible crown. People then and people now agonize to win some kind of crown or some kind of trophy that won't last very long. Even professionals today agonize to win something that won't last very long. Now, they may win a very lot of money, but it's not going to last for eternity. There's just no question about it. It passes away. It's a corruptible crown. Now, I don't think that Paul is criticizing sports at all. He used sports a good deal in illustrating the truth of the gospel. I think he's just saying this is the way things are. Nothing wrong with it. He said that bodily exercise does profit a little bit, at least. It's worth something. And I don't think he's critical of it. He's just saying this is the way it is, that athletes compete, they agonize, they struggle, they stretch every fiber in their lives to win a crown that doesn't last very long. Now, I would guess that in the United States today, how many people take part in sports of one kind or another? 30 million? I don't know. Who knows? Nobody knows. That's as good a guess as you can make, probably. Maybe it's 50 million. Millions of people in the United States would fit the description I have just made. They agonize in order to win some kind of crown that is corruptible, that passes away. That's the way it is in sports, says Paul. Athletic contests in general. Now, let Paul say this. Life should be like that. And that's the second point, the Christian life. Paul says here, in verse 24, so run that you may obtain. Run like the athletes run in the Isthmian Games, so that you may obtain. Now, let me digress here just a moment to suggest to you that Paul is talking about a very serious matter. There's no room on the track for people who stroll, for half-hearted runners, for people that don't agonize, for people that don't care, for those who just shuffle along in the crowd. God is interested in runners. Even so, run, says Paul, that you may obtain. So run the way the athletes run. Now, how do they run? They agonize. That's how they run. That's the Greek word for playing a game, agonize. How should we be running our Christian lives? We should be agonizing in our Christian lives. They tormented their bodies. They strained with every breath to the end that they might gain the mastery in their games. Even so, run, says Paul, in your Christian experience. How many of us live that way in our Christian experience? Very few. Perhaps none, really, not totally. And yet Paul is saying here to all of us to pour our lives into the Christian life, the way the athlete pours all of his life into the game. When Paul was finished, about to die, he said to Timothy, I have fought the good fight. You know what the Greek is? Maybe you know. I have agonized the good agony. That's the Greek. I have fought the good fight. I have played the good game. I have agonized the good agony. I have poured my life into Jesus Christ. even so run, says Paul, the way the runners run. How do they run? They agonize. How do they run? They exercise self-control. It says here, is temperate in all things. In what does the athlete who really cares exercise self-control? In all things. So I guess if Paul were here tonight, he might ask all of us what discipline there is in our lives. Do we have self-discipline the way the athlete has self-discipline? How about our grades in school? If indeed we're in school, should we be exercising more discipline? Should our grades be higher for Jesus' sake than they are? Or maybe that doesn't relate to what Paul is saying here. Even so, run that you may obtain. How about the way we handle television and the time we spend with it? Or is that a trivial kind of question? And Paul wouldn't ask that kind of question. The athlete is such that every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. In all things. I guess the real question here is the athlete's life a life of discipline? And that word is very closely related to the word disciple. So that the disciple's question is, and the question to you and to me, is our life a life of discipline? Or is it purposeless, meaningless, with no direction? William Borden died on his way to the mission field in 1912 after he had graduated from Yale and from Princeton Seminary. He was a millionaire, but gave his life to Christ on his way to the mission field, dying of spinal meningitis. He said this, it was found in his writings after he died. He said, a day in which nothing is done for Christ is wasted. Said, moreover, they are not pleasant. A day in which nothing is done for Christ is not pleasant. Now, we're not all millionaires like William Borden, but every person in this room has 24 hours a day to spend in some way or other. And Paul is saying about the athlete, he exercises self-control in all things. Is Christ the Lord of every aspect of your life? Now, that doesn't mean that every person in this room should be in some kind of Christian service, that is, the ministry or the mission field. I don't mean that. But is every hour of your 24 used under the lordship of Jesus Christ? I would suspect that lack of discipline is the characteristic of our age, and it creates useless people, purposeless people. A little Hindu girl one time was asked to define a Christian, however, and she said, a Christian is somebody who is different from everyone else. The athlete exercises self-control in all things, says Paul. Even so, run your race. Now, there is a difference. They do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. That's the difference from the races. When the Christian has finished his race, he receives a crown that does not pass away. In Revelation chapter 2, verse 10, we're told about a crown. And I mentioned last week, Paul striving for the crown, for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus, the crown that comes from the hand of Jesus himself and says, well done, thou good and faithful servant. That crown does not pass away. That's an incorruptible crown. And so the Christian pours all of his life into running this Christian race to win that crown from the hand of Jesus himself. Let me remind you, before we finally look at Paul's own life, that this is not an optional race for the Christian. This is not a race about which you can say, well, I may get into it or I may not. Not the Christian. Every Christian is involved in this race. Every Christian. So we've looked at two things, sports in general, how the Christian life should be like sports. And then finally, I want you to see Paul's own testimony in verses 26, first part of 27. Listen, Paul says, I, therefore, so run, not as uncertainly. That's first. Second, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air. Third, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection. First of all, Paul says about himself, his own personal testimony. Let me ask if this is our testimony this evening. First, I therefore so run, not as uncertainly. Running uncertainly means that you run without a goal in view. You are uncertain in your running. You run this way and then that way, and there's no sense of direction to your running. Paul says, I don't run that way. I do not run uncertainly. I run straight for the goal. I have a sense of direction in my life. There was a piece of poetry that I read one time. I think it was anonymous, but some of you English majors may know better, about a man who was pursuing the horizon. And I think it went something like this. I spied a man pursuing the horizon. Round and round they sped. You can never, I said. You lie, he replied, and ran on. Some of us in our Christian experience are rather like that. We're pursuing some horizon, a way out there. And we want to know what the Lord wants us to do 15 years from now, or 10 years from now, or 20 years from now, or 5 years from now. And we're always chasing the horizon. Whereas God's will for us in the present is often very, very clear. And the goal toward which he wants us to run now is sometimes very, very obvious, and we know that. And instead, we're pursuing some horizon. Paul said, I don't run uncertainly. I run directly for the goal. Now, let me remind you that Paul is not a young man at this point in his life. I don't know how old he was. Let's try 55. That's probably close. He's not a young man. 55 years of age. But he's not saying, if I only had it to do over again. He's not saying, if only I had set up some goals in my life 15 years ago or 20 years ago or 30 years ago. He's not saying those kinds of things. He's saying, I am pursuing the will of God in my life now, and I don't run uncertainly. I am going right for the goal. How well directed is your life? How well directed is your life? Paul was still busy about life and its goals, even in midlife at age 55. He is still busy about goals, and he's saying, I run certainly and directly right for the goal. The second thing that Paul says is this. So fight I, not as one that beateth the air. Boxing was one of the games in the Isthmian Games, one of the contests. So they knew this kind of language in Corinth. So fight I, not as one that beateth the air. In Greek here, beat is a very strong word. So fight I, not as one that throws a tremendous punch into the air, a great punch, a powerful punch, that completely misses the mark. Paul is saying here, I direct all of my activity toward the goal. I don't throw punches that miss. I'm not sure that what I'm going to tell you now is true, but I think it is. I think that I would be willing, for the proper amount of money, to fight the world heavyweight champion of the world, whoever that is now. I'm not sure. I'm very confused about that. I think there are a number of them now. But I would be willing to fight the heavyweight champion of the world for one round, or even a little longer, for the proper amount of money, if I had absolute, total assurance that he wouldn't hit me, that he would only throw punches that beat the air. Now, I'm still not sure I would do that, but I think I probably would. If he would only throw punches that would beat the air, because they wouldn't hurt me, they wouldn't touch me. How many denominations, how many churches, how many individual Christians are throwing punches all over the place that are just beating the air? Busyness, but not the Lord's business. And so all kinds of energy gets expended in all kinds of directions, even in infighting, Christian against Christian, this church member against that one, this church against that one, whatever. All kinds of busyness that completely misses the mark. Absolutely does no ministry for the sake of the Lord Jesus Christ. Tremendous busyness. I mean, all kinds of committee meetings and programs and just all kinds of heavy things, like heavy punches that completely miss the mark. Paul says, no, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air. But he says, I throw every punch perfectly aimed in the right direction. It could be that many of us going to lots of meetings, promoting lots of programs, doing this and that and the other thing, are doing a lot of busyness and throwing a lot of punches, heavy punches, you know, heavy meetings, important meetings, that completely miss the mark and don't hit the target at all. Paul says, no, I therefore so run, not as uncertainly. So fight I, not as one that beateth the air. And he says finally, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection. I buffet my body. Here is the opponent, Paul would seem to say. Here is my opponent in my race. Here is the enemy in my contest. Here is the person I have to beat in order to win. It's me. I keep under my body and bring it into subjection. The Greek means I give a black eye to. In the ancient games, if you were the winner, you then got to walk around the track and the other runners would follow you, and the language that was used was you carried them in bondage. You brought them in bondage after you. You defeated them and they were in bondage to you. Paul says, I bring my body into bondage. Now, what is the meaning here? I don't think he means I physically beat my body. Some Christians have thought that's what he meant and have physically beaten their bodies. And some of you know church history and know some of that practice that I assume may even go on today. I don't think that's what Paul means here. I think what Paul means is this. He meant that he was the chief enemy in God's work in his life. He was the chief problem. His desires, his goals were the chief problem that had to be solved and the enemy that had to be defeated, if indeed God was going to work in his life. And so I think what he means here is what he said elsewhere. I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. I don't think he means that you have to give up living in order to fulfill this requirement. I think he means you have to give up living for yourself. And so Paul gives us his testimony, his personal testimony. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly. So fight I, not as one that beateth the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection. Don't you know that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run, that ye may obtain. Only death for the Christian marks the end of this race. It is not an optional race for the Christian. Let me suggest to you as I close that this indeed is a race worth running. That this indeed is a fight worth fighting. That this indeed is a game worth playing. That this indeed is an agony worth agonizing over. Let us bow together for prayer.